You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Making it easier to part consumers with their hard-earned money has always been high on the list of priorities for many companies. There have been many attempts over the years, but not since the arrival of the SIM-based mobile phone has this prospect become closer to reality. Way back in January 2007, Nokia demonstrated a mobile phone which doubled as a credit card at the 2007 Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Then the credit card company Visa joined forces with the mobile phone maker Nokia to try and make this a reality. The process of making a purchase would be to wave your mobile device over a sensor. At the time, this was dubbed near-field communications, which would rely on the technology being accepted by consumers, retailers, telcos and banks, and subsequently rolled out. This week saw another push for this technology by the National Australia Bank, Visa and Telstra, as they begin a 3-month trial in the Melbourne Central Business District, involving 200 NAB and Telstra staff, and 30 retailers. This time, the consumer's information will be embedded in the SIM card, the chip which contains the mobile phone's account details, phone numbers, and now an NAB Visa card application. It's rumoured that the stores targeted in the trial are chemists, restaurants, and convenience stores. After the initial tests, the trial will be opened up to include customers of other banks. Instead of having a wallet or purse full of plastic cards, you could soon have them all supported on a single mobile phone, providing enhanced security and convenience. Now, while on the subject of security, this is the great unknown. At this point in time, there are no details available outlining what happens in the very likely possibility of losing your mobile phone or having it stolen, nor the finer details of how the transactions actually take place. So here we go again. We're just another step closer to the cashless world of commerce.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Surprise, surprise, teenagers' sleeping habits affected by technology. ID fraud costs Australian billions. Optus turns to broadband over power lines to compete with Telstra. If you hack Apple's iPhone, you stand to be rewarded. And Microsoft Vista, due for its first major update in early 2008. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra pushes CDMA shutdown message despite government plans for a delay. Mobile phones to be used as credit cards in a Melbourne trial. IBM Research promises nanoscale storage and logic. Windows Server 2008 to be delayed. And a teenage iPhone hacker trades his unlocking secrets for a new car. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra last week used SMS messages as part of their aggressive campaign to push customers off their CDMA mobile phone network and onto the new NextG network. Telstra are advising customers that they will be closing the CDMA network on the 28th of January next year and that they must change to the new network before then. The government has other ideas, however, with Communications Minister Helen Coonan introducing legislation to add a condition to Telstra's operating licence to prevent it from closing the CDMA network before the government is satisfied that the replacement network offers equivalent or better coverage. National Senator Ron Boswell, having travelled in Western Queensland last week, was reported as saying that he and other MPs are still receiving a stream of complaints about the new network from country constituents. Telstra, meanwhile, continues to assert that the network will meet or exceed existing coverage by mid-October this year, So the shutdown in January will go ahead as planned, although they admitted that many of the currently available handsets are not up to scratch for rural users, and that they have been slow to introduce suitable car kits. Telstra, the National Bank, and Visa are working together to trial technology to allow customers to use their mobile phone as a smart credit card simply by waving their phone over a special reader. The 3-month trial is expected to involve around 200 people at 30 locations around Melbourne in the first half of 2008. The system would work by embedding banking and credit card data in the phone's SIM card and then using contactless near-field communications technology to read the data by passing the phone over a reader when goods or services are purchased. The trials will initially involve locations such as fast service food outlets, pharmacies, restaurants, and convenience shops, according to an NAB spokesman, and the results will determine if the trial will be expanded to other cities or move on to a full commercial rollout. In the future, the system could be expanded to encode other types of data onto the phone, such as multiple different credit cards, loyalty cards, building access, or public transport tickets. A Visa spokesman said that similar trials are also being undertaken with other telecommunications companies and financial institutions in the United States and Asia. IBM scientists working in San Jose, California, are working on a way to manipulate and measure the magnetic field of single atoms. This could lead to magnetic storage devices such as hard disk drives, which can store huge amounts of data, with each data bit requiring either a single atom or a cluster of just a few atoms. A device the size of today's iPods could store up to 30,000 feature-length movies, or the entire contents of YouTube. Meanwhile, at IBM's Zurich lab, another group has developed a logic gate comprised of a single molecule. A logic gate is a type of electronic switch which is the fundamental building block of all computer chips. Unlike other molecule-sized logic gates, these do not change shape when switching states, making them suitable for use in computer chips. It is hoped that a way can be found to arrange these molecules into useful circuits, which would allow the creation of computer chips the size of a speck of dust. Their small size would also allow them to operate much quicker than current technology. The researchers were originally investigating the vibrations of the molecules when they happened to notice their switch-like abilities. Both developments have been reported in the prestigious journal Science. In an announcement on a company blog, Microsoft has revealed that their much-anticipated new server operating system will be delayed until the first quarter of next year. Previously slated for a December 2007 release, the product, previously codenamed Longhorn and now known as Windows Server 2008, still has no firm release date, although the blog states that a launch event scheduled for the 27th of February in Los Angeles will go ahead. The event will also feature new versions of their Visual Studio and SQL Server products and will be followed by similar events at locations around the world in the following weeks. The post does not give any specific reasons for the delay, merely stating, "We would rather spend a little more time to meet the high quality bar that our customers and partners deserve and expect." The 17-year-old hacker who became one of the first in the world to unlock an iPhone has traded his unlocked phone to a mobile phone repair company for a brand new Nissan 350Z worth around $60,000. US mobile phone repair company Certicel is also providing 3 new 8GB iPhones and a paid consulting job as part of the deal. George Holtz has stated in his blog that he will give the iPhones to 3 online associates who helped develop the technique, which allows an iPhone to be used on a mobile phone network other than the American AT&T network to which it is locked. A spokesman for Certicel said that they would not be selling the phone, instead displaying it as a unique piece of mobile handset history at their Kentucky offices and at trade shows. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
GPRS, Granny's Running Pretty Slowly.
Oh, is that what it stands for?
I don't know, but it sounds pretty good, I would have thought.
This is a problem that's been around for nigh on 100 years or more.
Can I just tell you?
The government delaying could actually make the problem worse.
The producers of Tech Talk Radio don't endorse
or condone the following behaviour.
Exactly, but here we go. This is what an IT person who's got a mission will do.
It's got this whopper of an external antenna that you can clip on the outside.
Not only mobile data networks, but also mobile voice networks.
Some music you have to listen to later. Though.
Really?
Yeah, well, not for not your Vivaldi rubbish, but...
Do you reckon Microsoft are going to nail this?
No, it's purely on signal strength. The strongest one effectively wins.
You wouldn't have your neighbours hijacking your femtocell and making calls on it.
This sort of integration is really a very specialist field.
We'll have a Linux rebooting party. How many days has it been running now?
480...
I think I've got to get a boil lanced on that day.
Or a lance boil or something.
Wouldn't your arm hurt after doing the first 30 minutes?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
This is Tech Talk Radio. Welcome wherever you might be listening to us anywhere around the world. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron, very good evening to you.
Hello there, Andrew. It's good to be back again.
It is. And Graham Callaghan over there in the corner, who's currently very quiet.
Hi, Graham. Hello, Andrew. Hello, Dr. Ron.
Oh, ventriloquism.
No, you Graham, didn't even see my lips move then.
Graham is in a car somewhere, travelling towards the studio.
At ludicrous speed.
I hope not, for his sake. he's been recalled or working or something to that effect. But anyway, we did hear his dulcet tones during... The news that was just on there. Thank you very much. And by the way, all those grabs in this week, the promo that
you
cut up
there.
What was
that all about? Your arm would fall off after 30 minutes.
You take these things out of context. I don't know why you do this.
It's terrible,
but nonetheless,
isn't
it? It was very funny. I can't remember what we were talking about there.
I can't remember what the context was for that one. No.
Anyway, now, big cheerio this morning. And I say this morning because Jeff Gates wakes up. We're breakfast radio in the United States.
Oh, we're breakfast radio for Jeff Gates. Morning, Jeff. Time to get up out of bed.
Out of bed.
Come on.
Wherever you are
at
the moment.
Hit the shower.
What, it'd be springtime? No, fall over there at the moment.
It's becoming fall.
So it'd be getting cold mornings up there, I would have thought. So, nonetheless, Jeff, out of bed. And send us an email because I no doubt you're listening on the stream because he's got one of these internet radio thingies as your clock radio.
Streaming radio, clock radio. That's pretty
great
tricky.
Idea, isn't it?
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I'm going to put one of those down for my Christmas present, I think. My wife will go, what's that? What do you want one of those for? And by the time you end up explaining it to her, you go, nah, don't worry about it. It's too technical. Too technical.
If you want to listen to us on the stream and you happen to be listening to us on the podcast at the moment or maybe on a radio station, one of Australia's fine community stations, you can actually find the stream information on our website.
We had lots of people streaming last week. I think we actually suffered bandwidth degradation because of the fact we had so many people streaming.
Yeah, we did. I think it was a record for the Shoutcast/iTunes stream.
That's good. I think Windows was off the scale too at the moment. We'll hopefully fix that in the not too distant future and get a bit more bandwidth.
It's a good problem to have for us,
isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
It is very good. Now, let's talk about newsletters and
lots
emails
of feedback, lots of hellos.
Stuff. Now,
what have you got there?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
I'm well prepared. It's all yours.
Over to you, Dr. Ron. Hello to Alex, who tells us that potentially he is our youngest listener.
Alex, g'day, Alex.
Hey, Alex. He's 11 years old and he lives in the United Kingdom.
Oh, hello.
He'd also like to buy a coffee mug.
Would he? Oh, that's right. I saw the coffee mug transaction happening there at the moment.
So I sent him all the pertinent information. But Alex, it's good to have you listening and send us an email back again. We'd like to know whereabouts you're from, what school you go to, all your technological interests over there in the
UK. That'd be good. And if you play games, you could be our regular gamer, for goodness sakes.
Let us know. Hello to Randall Irvin. Now, Randall
Where
says...
Where have I heard that name before?
I'm not sure, but Randall says, as far as he knows at this time, there are no viruses that affect the Mac. This is our ongoing Mac virus discussion that we've been having the last few weeks.
This is opening Pandora's box a little bit.
Yeah, there is antivirus software available. He says, I had a popular brand, and it got its update about once a month. What the... It also played havoc with the system, so it was removed and lost. Why do the not Mac community, I think that's us, I think that's having a go at us, Andrew, persist with the, you just wait, you'll get a virus one day. When and if there is an attack, I'll pick up a fix when I next go shopping. There you go.
So, well, it's not a matter of that. We're preemptive here. We say buyer beware and just watch out. So what we're saying, we're not sort of saying you're going to get a virus because You know, like, you run a mail server, Dr. Ron, like I run a mail server, and let me tell you how the virus catcher works. I prevent all those viruses going downstream to my customers and my clients and things like that, even keeping them out of the office.
You're doing some preemptive virus
catching.
I do the same, and I'm also running anti-spam software at a server level, but you need to run those things on your clients as well. So whether you're using a PC or a Mac, it's just a good practice to be in, isn't it?
It is indeed. And we've got some more interesting Mac news coming up later on in the show. It was very interesting, actually. There's a lot of things. NBC have given Mac the old heave-ho when it comes to their movie distribution. That's hot off the presses today.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that.
I saw that was in the MX magazine,
very shortly,
reading that on the train tonight.
Yeah. We must get Justin back in very shortly, too.
Yeah, we need to.
We can find out all good things Mac. We can answer all these questions for you. You need a Mac guru.
Justin Dunlop is the Tech Talk Radio Mac guru, and he has his very own Mac museum, which he calls the Apple Orchard. He's been collecting.
Has he got a two? I think he has got a two, hasn't he? Very first one.
Yes, he's been collecting Macs and tinkering with Apple equipment for 20 years or more.
Have you seen the new one? The Mac iBook or whatever it is? The new one? I think I talked about it last week. It's very sexy looking device.
That's right, we're chatting about it last week. And
yeah.
Steve Jobs was showcasing it.
Touting his wares. Mm. It was indeed. Mm. Do you have any other correspondence that needs to be entered into the meeting for this evening, Dr. Ron?
I think that's all for tonight.
Okay. Let's just a podcast reminder. If you want, you can hear the show via the website or subscribe to our podcast. Now, we also do the news. The news you heard Graham reading before, you can subscribe to just the news if that's all you want to hear, or you're bandwidth impaired for that matter. You're on a dial-up somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Or Adam Turner, our guest commentator there. His expertise comes in from time to time. Well, every week, actually. And you can hear him on his very own podcast as well. So just visit the techtalkradio.com.au website. Look down the bottom. I think it's on the bottom right at the moment. I should bring it up on the screen.
That's good. If you want just a couple of 3-minute technology grabs a week, something like that, you can get Adam's segment, or you can get the news segment on their own podcast feed.
All right, let's continue, shall we? Mobile payments for next year. Now, Graham touted this on the news.
Yeah, heard that.
And I must admit, I had a bit of a rant about it because I'm a bit sceptical, for want of a better word. This near-field technology where on your SIM card, and let's face it, you can put lots of things on a SIM card, but now you can put a little application that pays for your goods. The thing that's concerning me is that the fact that no one's telling us how it works. So we don't know how secure it is, how secure it isn't. Whether, you know, you have to sign for something, whether you put a PIN number in, how it works. We don't know.
Those crazy Koreans a couple of years ago, they come up with all these fantastic...
That's a gross generalisation.
Gimmicky... Oh, no, they're funny because they come up with all these gimmicky, gadgety things.
They play games. They're very big in games.
They're great.
They have television shows about video games, for goodness
sake.
Yeah,
they do.
You want to watch Warcraft live on a Saturday night.
Yeah,
you've got nothing better to do. But anyway, I digress.
It's a Korea TV.
Yes.
They were trialling this sort of a system, and they were having, like, your SMSing or MMSing barcodes. So on the display of your phone, you'd actually have a message that you could recall, or you could have sent to your phone, which would appear as a barcode. You can use that to scan for things.
Ooh.
So you could say subscribe to... say Safeway were doing it. You could get your Safeway barcode SMS'd or MMS'd to your mobile phone, and then you could have that scanned as you... so you'd use your mobile phone to check out with your groceries, and you wouldn't actually, it'd be completely cashless. So I don't know if it's that sort of thing. It sounds to me like it is.
It's bizarre. Mm. Well, anyway, this is a thing with Telstra, Visa and the NAB, as we spoke about earlier.
Right.
It sort of started off in 2007, back at a trade show in Las Vegas, where this was touted. Well, it's 2007 now, really, but earlier on in the year, the Consumer Electronics Show, where you could actually, you know, see a demonstration of how this thing worked. You just waved your phone across a little scanner at your point of sale, and it just debited things to your card. I assume it's, and I'm assuming, I'm guessing, because, you know, they're not telling us.
Did you think it was a proximity thing to the...
Well, it is a proximity thing, but what I'm suggesting is that potentially you go through the checkout and you wave your phone. Instead of swiping your card like you do at the moment across your teller, you know, your little point of sale thing in your supermarket or wherever you're doing your shopping, you wave your phone over a sensor instead, and it can collect the information from that, such as your credit card details or loyalty or whatever it is that they choose to embellish it with as time goes by. And I'm assuming it's just the piece of paper prints out and you sign it like you would a normal transaction.
Interesting.
So in theory, your wallet will become lighter, because how many bits of plastic have you got in your wallet? If you've got your credit cards, your FPOS, your driver's license, your library card, your work thing, or, you know, all those cards, you could be a little lighter. The only concern, though, is how do you prove the signature? Do you have to have your signature on the back of your mobile phone when you sign your credit card?
Maybe merely the fact that you've got the thing in your possession is proof enough. Like, if we have a mobile...
What if you nick it?
Well, if you have a mobile phone in your hand now, you're making a call...
My wife has my mobile phone 9 times out of 10, and I can never find it.
That's your silly fault. But no,
well, that's my point, exactly.
But at the moment, if you have a mobile phone in your possession, that's given that you're in control of that mobile phone. You can make calls and you can incur debt simply by having it in your possession. And it would be, presumably, if you lost the phone, it would be incumbent on you to actually cancel a service so you didn't incur debts from some unscrupulous thief.
Okay. What happens if you just accidentally walk past a scanner that's very sensitive? You could walk past a local fast food chain and buy something that you didn't visit. Well, people could capture it as they go past. Remember those things in the car parks with the remote control-y things on cars? Yeah, your car central locking.
It'd have to be fairly close proximity, I'd imagine, within a couple of centimetres, wouldn't it?
Well, one would think.
But I think it's okay. But I'm still a little bit sceptical, though, Andrew, because we had... When I started going to university back in the early 90s at the university...
I'm sceptical. Yes.
Okay. You are. Oh. You've got your sceptical hat on tonight. But they introduced those smart cards, which are like what we call SIM cards today. And they said, this is going to revolutionise everything. We're going to have one card, this smart card. You use it for making phone calls. You use it for your photocopying. You use it when you want to identify yourself when you're taking books out of the library. You use it for everything. And they did at the university, and it worked very well.
It's called the Australia card, isn't it?
Well, this was a university version, and it worked quite well. But it didn't actually take off for the general community. It was just limited to like the university community, if you like.
And it worked all right?
It worked fantastically. Okay. And the good thing with those SIM cards, the smart cards, is they can hold so much more information than you can store on a simple magnetic stripe.
Yeah. We'll have to dig deep. We'll find out what's going on here. There's a few interesting calls that need to be made, I think, in the course of the next few weeks. We'll see what happens. All right. Did you know that Virgin Broadband had a bit of an outage last Friday, I think it was? Their HSDPA fell off the planet.
Oh, okay.
Virgin Mobile's new wireless broadband customers were left without internet services for at least 5 hours.
Are they running a phone network or just wireless broadband?
No. Remember, you had a gadget. Remember? Well, I think it was Virgin's gadget where you bought the little box. It was an HSDPA thing and you could plug your phone into it and all that sort of stuff as well.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. I wonder,
they're doing everything, aren't they?
Don't know whether they've sold many of those yet or whether it's even been released for that matter. But anyway... because Virgin don't run 24-hour support, and this is what you get with different phone companies, really, isn't it? You ring Telstra and you can speak to them all the time. You ring Optus and I think you can speak to them all the time. You ring Hutchison and you can speak to an Indian telemarketer all the time.
If you ring Engine?
Yeah, Engine.
You get yourself comfortable.
Yeah. Get yourself a coffee, kick back,
and
relax.
And a cut lunch. Yeah.
Yes.
Put the TV on.
But when you ring Virgin, you don't ring them out of hours because if you need them between 3 a.m. and 7 in the morning, forget it. Oh. And this is when their outage happened. And as a result, there was no one there to pick it up. So
the first bunny to work in the morning that turned the lights on and the photocopier, and all these calls were, the phones were all ringing off the hook saying, help.
Yes. But from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., their call center is closed. They don't offer 24 hours. And Virgin customers, it's like anything. When you go to log back onto something that's been down for a while, there's a mass string of authentication requests come in. And, of course, that overloaded the network as well. So, you know, it's like, it was all very slow again, leading up to poor people connecting. So there you go. You get what you pay for. But that's Virgin.
Now, let us know if you're a Virgin customer. Send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Have you noticed, Dr. Ron, the mainstream media has been bypassed of recent times for getting your message out, and everyone's now using YouTube?
Yeah, there's a lot of people now that are starting to launch YouTube campaigns when they do their mainstream media campaigns.
And the rest, for those of you who are listening overseas, we have this little thing happening in Sydney at the moment, just up the road. It's called APEC.
Yes,
have you heard of that?
APEC.
Anyway, apparently there's a lot of very important people that have come to town.
Mr. Bush is one of them.
Yes, and I wouldn't want to be living in Sydney at the moment. There's a 5 kilometre exclusion zone around the harbour. They've built the Great Wall of Sydney, which prevents anyone and everything from getting within cooee of the city centre.
Cyclone fences and concrete barriers in the streets.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Have the terrorists won, just quietly. Either that or we've got some pretty savage protesters in this town.
Yeah, they're just being careful, aren't they?
I think so. But anyway, we digress. John Howard, he's the Prime Minister.
Yes.
How much longer, we don't know. But John Howard used YouTube this morning to push the benefits of this week's APEC meeting in Sydney.
Did you watch his YouTube clip?
No.
No?
And that's my question.
Who watches
John Howard on YouTube? It's like sending out a press release on a Sunday, for goodness sakes. Who reads it?
Novelty value more than anything. You wouldn't go and seek it out unless you just were doing it for novelty value, I don't think.
How many times have you typed John Howard into YouTube, I ask you?
Well, It's funny you should ask, because I did on the I did on the weekend, but I was looking. I started out by looking at funny video clips of.
Yeah, you were looking for detrimental things to
I was. I was wolfing, and I did type in John Howard. I also typed in Peter Costello and Kevin Rudd and some other names of politicians, prominent politicians in Australia. There's lots of funny.
You're looking
out
for
there.
The dirt.
Mm.
I'm impressed. That's
some
very good.
Funny stuff up on YouTube too.
There is indeed. And was it, Graham, in the news was saying that you can actually store the whole contents of YouTube on these new semiconductors that they're trying to develop, these new... Yes, I thought that was very impressive. Hopefully it gets here in time. We can talk about that.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
In the meanwhile...
not tonight, but it will.
Yes. Mm. Tech Talk Radio would not be Tech Talk Radio without a talk about the current... Oh, good evening, Graham. He's just walked in the door. Would actually not be Tech Talk Radio without talking about Telstra and NextG.
Oh, now what's happened now?
Telstra has revealed that there'll be no 14.4 megabit per second downloads on NextG. They're going to go faster than that. They're just going to bypass the next speed and rank it up.
I thought you were going to say it was going to be limited for some reason, but they're going to exceed the 14.4.
Yep. Although Telstra's 3G network is capable of a 14.4 megabit per second download, currently... If you get a card at the moment, just to put things into perspective, in Australia, you can get about 3.6 megabits per second off HSDPA on the current cards. Although Mark would say, oh, yes, but we're running out 7.2 megabits per second at the moment.
That's pretty good. It's faster than the ADSL that I've got.
Oh, yes, without a shadow of a doubt. The next level is 14.4, obviously, but they're going to go beyond that. Telstra are going to go to the next level, saying that, I guess because there's no hardware out there, why go if you can go faster? So be interesting to see how that technology rolls out. Really, in a lot of respects.
Is this on the 4G roadmap, or is this a higher 3G?
No, we're talking 3G, race. NextG. Well, I don't know. The 4G rollout is very much still
theoretical, pie in the sky stuff.
Well, no, they've done tests. It's actually been done on a one base station to one device thing at 100 megabits per second or whatever it is the data rate's been equated to.
But so, it's all in the lab at the moment, isn't it? It's all test stuff.
It is. Mm. It is. But, yeah, we'll watch this space. But yeah, not bad. Not bad for data. And hopefully the price comes down because, boy, you could blow a few bucks very quickly at those data rates. But... also, Telstra saying this week that NextG is now more popular than CDMA because CDMA is definitely closing down on January the 28th.
Well, it
allegedly.
Sounds like people have definitely. Been listening and they're starting to migrate their telephone services. And if you've got CDMA and you're still using it at the moment, you really need to sit up and start to have a look around, see what your options are. I'm not saying you need to migrate to NextG necessarily, but have a look at your options because... CDMA is not the future.
Telstra has revealed that for the first time there were more subscribers to its third generation NextG network than its 2G CDMA counterparts, with over 1 million users adopting the 3G technology. I wonder if it drops out like 3G does. Well, I mean, like CDMA doesn't. Because, you know, Mark was saying the other day, they get these continuous funny little dropouts.
Mm.
I noticed that I have a lot of customers who use 3G from the Telstra NextG brand, and it is. They'd be right in the heart of the city, and all of a sudden, they're just gone. It's like talking to no one. But according to Telstra, the company now has over 2 million users on the 3G network. And NextG and the 2100 3G network, it shares with Hutchison. So that's pretty good. Good on you, Telstra.
That's
lifting
good.
Lifting the standards a little bit. I know we go on about it at times, but in essence, the technology is good. The handsets are somewhat ordinary. And I think that's really what they're trying to deal with at the moment, with the blue ticks. So if you're out in the countryside, if you're in the back of Queensland, or if you're in the outback somewhere, make sure you buy yourself a 3G handset with that lovely blue tick on it. There's a brick, as Mark was saying too, coming out.
It's good to see the direction they're headed. If they're making announcements like this and they're thinking about these sorts of things, then the one thing which is good for all of us in the long run is competition.
Exactly.
So that's good.
The other thing too, if you're a CDMA customer or someone on the 2G-ish network, you'll be starting to be inundated with SMSs from the phone company in the not-too-distant
saying,
please
upgrade. Oh, really? They're going to start spamming you.
They have already.
Have they?
Telstra's trying to push mobile phone customers off its regional network and onto NextG with the aggressive text marketing campaign, and they'll also ring you because they can. They're the phone company. When you think about it, it's an ideal marketing opportunity, isn't it? They've got your phone number, you're a customer, they can spam you legitimately.
And they don't have to pay for the call.
Well, yes, I'm sure there'll be some form of internal accountability for them or anything like that. But anyway, they can charge themselves. So
that's right.
Now, something that's relatively interesting and probably a bit up your alley, Dr. Ron, ID fraud.
Oh, yes,
costing billions of dollars.
It is.
Identity fraud is costing Australians allegedly billions of dollars each year, and nearly everyone is concerned about the theft and illegal use of their identity, according to Mr. Ruddick, who is our...
Attorney General.
Yes. Yeah. So is this really as bad as it seems?
It is. I'm concerned about it. And so much of it is undetected and unreported. It would happen on a daily basis and people would be completely oblivious to what's going on. Mm. You can take some very, very simple steps to protect yourself, and people should. Go out and buy yourself a shredder. If you're finished with your phone account, or even if you get an envelope with something on it that's addressed to you, pop it in the shredder. Don't just throw it in the bin, because these people...
And they're cheap. They're $20 at...
Yeah.
You find them at Safeways and the just local supermarket.
Yeah, local office supply shop of choice. Yeah, you should grab one, because if you have this information out there, even just the name and address on an envelope, people can just start to piece together information. It doesn't take long to formulate. Look, they've got your name, address, your date of birth, where you work, what your phone numbers are, and then... If you're silly enough to throw stuff in the bin which contains other information like social security numbers or Centrelink numbers or driver license numbers, things like that, people can do almost anything. I was changing bank account details last week because I'm closing my bank account and I'm moving my mortgage, my home loan.
Well, well done that, man, shopping around.
That's right, and I was changing my direct debit arrangements.
We're going to do that with the government shortly, I think. We're going to shop around.
Mm. But the interesting thing is that some people, when I was ringing them over the phone to change the information, some people said, or asked me half a dozen questions and were quite security conscious.
Yep.
And other people said, what's your name? And I said, Dr. Rob. And they said, what's your date of birth? And I told them, they said, yeah, it's fine, what do you want to do?
So they say, prove it.
Well, I could have been anybody, and all I did was say my name and my date of birth, and I've got complete control over where payments are being made to and what bank accounts and things like that. So you really have to be very careful with your personal information.
Traditional questions too is your mother's maiden name.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, especially unscrupulous telemarketers, will say, I'm ringing on behalf of the bank, and this can be a phishing. Normally you get them on emails, but you can also get them audibly too on a telephone call. Now, I remember, it was probably about 6 months back now, I was standing in a hardware shop and I got a phone on a Saturday afternoon from someone who allegedly was my bank, purporting to the fact that, oh, we're just checking up and we'd like to, are you happy with your credit card? And da 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 da. And she asked me some questions. I said, no, I'm not telling you that. You should have that information. I didn't know it from a bar of soap. Yeah. If I said, look, I'm more than happy to ring you back on a published 1-300 number.
Yeah, and who should I ask for?
And all that. But I'm not going to give... If you've unsolicited called me, I'm not going to give you that information. That's so you've got to be aware of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it's the opening of the National Identity Fraud Awareness Week in Sydney. There's a lot of weeks this week, have you noticed?
A lot of different weeks this week.
Yes, there is another week. We'll get to it very shortly, but the Online Safety Week is this week as well.
Yeah, Senator Coonan, the Online Safety for Kids, the NET Alert.
Yeah, so and Senator Coonan's doing the PR electioneering trial at the moment.
Be Graham, alert.
Are you going to push your finger up and say good evening to everybody?
Good evening, everybody.
It's nice of you to show up. Did you bring a note?
No.
No? Should we ask where you were, or is that not appropriate?
I was driving to the studio at high speed, as reported on air. I was listening to the show.
Okay. Did you notice any white flashes in the rearview mirror as you went past?
No, actually, I was driving at a reasonably sensible speed, because those white flashes lead to embarrassing mail arriving on my desk at the office.
So not at the moment, actually.
Oh, don't they?
No, they're all on strike in this state.
Oh, that's a good idea.
They are. But it doesn't mean you're not going to get one eventually.
Oh.
Yeah. But, watch this space. So how was your week in tech? Obviously really good because you're here late. Mine was great because I had nothing happen to me. It was a perfect week.
And now you've said that, you know what's going to happen, don't you?
Ah, well, it can only be downhill from here, really, can't it?
I've had an interesting day today. I've had RAID arrays that are failing and UPSs that don't supply power, and not good.
Oh, well.
UPSs that are interruptible.
Interruptible power supplies, yes.
IPSs.
Yes.
What's the point of them?
No, the mains power goes off and the output of the UPS goes off as well. A UPS is, for those who don't know, is a device that's got batteries in it.
Allegedly uninterruptible, but obviously not in this case.
Yeah, designed to keep your computer running when the power fails so that it's got time to shut down and save all your data properly
but it didn't
corrupt it. But no, it didn't. No, the power went off and the server...
I know how to fix those.
Well, and,
I know how to fix those. Change the batteries.
And then the RAID array became corrupt. And,
oh, no.
That array is rebuilding as we speak. And Fantastic. Hopefully by late tonight.
So you're going back there after the show, are you? Going back and do it?
No, fortunately, I think I can do the rest remotely. So hopefully the customer will be back on air by the morning.
Fantastic. Well done, that man. Yes, hope you put your rates up for it as well. Dr. Ron, let's talk about
good and loyal customer. No.
Sensational. They're good. Best kind. Keep them. Look after them.
I know.
They come back for more then. Dr. Ron, cyber divide widens and the kids outsmart their parents. What is going on here? We're not talking about hacking the software that we spend a lot of money to protect our children online, are we?
No. We'll have a bit more of a rave about that later in the program, but this study shows that kids are online twice as much as parents think they are, while 23% admit to encountering strangers online and 7% admit to meeting them offline. That's a huge number. Like nearly 1 in 10 have met people offline that they had never met before. This gap is widening. The gap is widening between what kids do online and what their parents think they do. The study was commissioned by security company Symantec that makes the antivirus software and security software.
Yeah, there you go.
That doesn't surprise me, really.
That's a huge number. 7% have gone out of their way to meet someone in the real world that they've just met by happenstance online. Really?
No. I've got young kids and I know how sociable they are. And, of course, if you actually remove the internet and, like, you know, I watch my kids interact with other kids in the park and they are just completely oblivious.
Everyone's your best friend when you're a kid.
Exactly. Exactly. And I guess that's what they're on about.
So was that 7% just in young people, or was that 7% overall of internet users?
7% just in young people.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Targeted
really.
By the survey. Pete Findlay, CEO of Giant Campus, a technology consulting company, said that kids today have never known a world without the internet, and interacting with their peers via social networks is common practice.
It is. It is. I must admit, these days, even in a commercial world, I can live without the telephone, but I can't live without the internet. It really is. It's an essential service.
It's rather nice when there's a telephone outage beyond your control, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think?
That can go either way.
Now, while we're talking about kids and internet, Kieran Perkins was stealthily appointed Parent Ambassador for NetAlert, Protecting Australian Families Online. This is Senator Coonan. She's buddied up with Kieran.
Yeah, some sort of a sportsman, yes?
Yes, Olympian to be precise. You've heard of him?
Moderately successful one.
He swims.
Oh, right, okay. In the pool, very good.
I think he was called Fish, or was that Thorpey? I can't remember.
Whatever.
Anyway, I got this funny press release, which I alluded to earlier on in the program about Sunday, because that's when politicians send out their best press releases. There's a standing joke in this industry that if you don't want anyone to know about it, send it out on Friday afternoon at about 5 o'clock. Or
by the time Monday morning comes around, you'll have forgotten about it.
It's old news and everyone doesn't want to know about it. Well, this one came out about 2 o'clock on Sunday, and it was an announcement which sort of caught me unawares. It said, Senator Coonan and Kieran Perkins. Well, I actually didn't say Kieran Perkins at the time, but I said an alleged sporting official, Olympian, going to be announced at Melbourne's Fed Square. And they're actually doing the roadshow at the moment, so the minister and Kieran they're sharing hotel rooms, or probably hotels actually, and doing the rounds, touting the benefits of being a safe parent online, which is very important.
It is.
And the underlying message that they're trying to give to parents is there's nothing better than parental protection online.
Watch what
your kids do. Get your head out of the sand. Pop your head around the corner and ask your kids show them your MySpace site.
Don't
things
rely
like that.
On the government's NetAlert package. Too.
Talk to other parents. Talk to people who know. Talk to us. Come on the forum. There's lots of places where you can find information about what your kids are probably up to, and get right into it, because that's the best way.
I was walking around the studio, the radio station here, probably a couple of weeks back, and after I made that announcement on air, I said, one of the great ways is to ask your kids to show them your MySpace site. One of the kids here who does a program prior to ours sort of came and said, thanks for that. I haven't got my MySpace site anymore.
Oh,
Mum and Dad took it down.
Mum and Dad said, show us your MySpace. Anyway, it must have gone down really well.
Oh,
so,
no.
It's worth doing, everybody. Go and do it. Now, just before we go to the break, the United States gives 9/11 standard a bit of a bite. The US government regulators have proposed to penalize 3 wireless carriers for failing to meet new standards in the US. We could only dream about this here.
Yes.
For locating mobile telephone callers during emergencies.
Yes.
The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, the equivalent of
ACMA
here in Australia, said it proposed to fine 3 operators in the US, $2.82 million US, which are around about $3.5 million Australian dollars, for failing to meet the new standards. Sprint, Nextel, Alcatel, no it's not, Alltel, and United States Cellular. So apparently in the US, if you call 911, the equivalent of our 000 over here, apparently that information, the lat longs, obviously need to be delivered to the call taker.
They do, and they have to be delivered to within a certain accuracy. There's 2 ways of doing it in the United States. One way is via triangulation, which means that the carriers use 3 or 4 or more base stations, and they work out approximate angles from where the signal's coming from, and they can have a guesstimate as to whereabouts you are when you're making the call. The second more accurate way is you have a GPS receiver in your telephone and the lat and long information is sent as part of the call. And they have certain requirements depending on which system your network's using in terms of the accuracy.
It's common sense. Why don't we do it here?
Don't get me started.
Well, please start.
It's old technology, and we don't have anything like that in Australia.
There's even new Nokia handsets coming out that I've seen advertised on the side of a bus, which states that you can actually have your navigation devices in there. So it's not as if the handsets don't know where you are, and yet they can't pass a couple of extra bits of data, which is just digital, down the line to a call taker or something.
But it's not in all handsets. There's very few handsets in Australia that do have GPS in them.
Oh, yeah, so very few set-top boxes in television stations.
It would put the cost of the handsets up, and you'd have to...
Yeah. Oh, would it?
Yeah.
In the interest of safety?
We wouldn't be able to sell Australians all the second-rate handsets anymore. We'd have to actually buy proper ones like they use in the US.
Now you're sounding cynical. No, I think it's a good idea. I think you need to have it, because if you're not sort of 100% and you needed to call and you couldn't talk or whatever it is like that...
Well, there's going to be times when like a GPS fix is not available. You might be stuck in a lift, you might be in an underground car park, you might be in a tunnel or something.
Exactly.
Then so be it, but you're in the same situation as we are at the moment in this country. But if you do have a satellite fix or the network is able to triangulate your position, then it's going to save the emergency services a great deal amount of time if they can't elicit an address from you.
Yes.
Lat Longs, emergency service. I think we've had Alan Eade in from the Ambos.
We have.
Do you know if they can deal with a Lat Long, a call taker or something
like
that?
I do know, and the answer is yes, they can.
So if you've got a GPS or if you've got a navigation device, a TomTom or a Garmin or something, and it tells you where you are... Would they prefer a Lat Long? I guess if you're in regional areas of the country, it'd probably be a good thing. But if
you ring up and you say, I'm on a boat in the middle of Port Phillip Bay and the person I'm boating with has slipped over and cracked their head open and I need urgent medical assistance and my Lat Long is this, then they will be able to send help straight away with that information.
Fantastic.
Although under normal circumstances, I think they'd prefer the street and the nearest cross street.
I'm at the corner of Surak Road and
I'm at the Green Boy at the end of Pier 63.
Yeah. It's good to know that they can be a bit flexible too.
They can. The system that's used by the emergency services at the moment in Melbourne will cater for that.
What about the rest of the country? Do you know? Do you have inside goss as to how it works
in other
places?
States, I don't know, Andrew. No, I can find out.
That'd be interesting, actually. It'd be interesting to see how the other states work. All right, let's talk about blogs. Now, we've talked about this earlier and drugs, the AFL drugs in sports thing.
Oh,
if you're listening to us overseas, apparently, to cut a long story short.
AFL's our football code.
It is.
In Victoria.
And there's a bit of a brouhaha floating around here in the mainstream media that some medical documents about some players was leaked and found itself splashed across the mainstream media. And of course, because they like protecting their sources, and anyway, it was Channel 7. As a result of having these things splashed across the mainstream media, the players of the AFL have decided that they are not going to talk to Channel 7 anymore. It's a bit of a protest, and I think it's a damn good thing too, because...
A very pointed protest too.
It is. But anyway, it's a very funny little thing. But apparently this was all found on a blog, and a not very credible blog either. And it's made Adam Turner ask that question again, which he asked probably a couple of episodes back, about when does journalism become a blog and when is, you know, blogs treated as credible journalism?
And should journalists be allowed to blog?
So here's Adam's view from the couch for this week.
Adam Turner's view from the couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Is the internet part of the real media debate has been reignited in Australia as part of the AFL's latest drug scandal. Australia's mainstream media is arguing that a court injunction preventing it from publishing details of drug allegations involving an AFL club and its players should be lifted because the information is freely available online. The Supreme Court of Victoria has extended the injunction against publishing the details despite lawyers insisting that because the players' identities have been revealed on the internet, they had entered the public domain and confidentiality no longer existed. I bet the media outlets involved wouldn't feel that way if it was something they didn't want printed. In response, the AFL's lawyers said the sites on which the details appear are chat rooms which only deal in rumour, innuendo and gossip. Such informal ramblings are a far cry from dissemination in a serious form of media. So, what is a serious form of media? The media's argument is pretty rich, coming from a bunch of media outlets which for years have insisted bloggers and the like don't deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as real journalists. Suddenly they want a chat room and the country's biggest news outlets to be considered on equal footing. If a chat room can say it, why can't we? It doesn't take much searching online to find out the name of the club, a job made easier by the fact that Google caches the few mainstream media reports before the injunction was put in place. Now you know the name of the club, just put that and the word drugs into Google News or Dig and you get a whole string of cached hits from the mainstream media. I even found the name of the club still mentioned in the blog of one major daily paper. Obviously they missed it in the cleanup. Now I need to declare my interests here. I'm part of this mainstream media that I'm criticising. I make my living writing for newspapers, magazines, websites, blogs and the occasional podcast. The ground rules vary and sometimes I put a few noses out of joint when people think I get it wrong. Now, I wouldn't break this injunction in any of those formats, although I know I'd probably get away with it in some of them, because it's not worth the risk to both myself and the various publishers. What makes this really interesting is that the comments weren't even made by someone who considers themselves a journalist. The comments online which the media outlets are using to make their case were made by readers of sites, not those who write for the site. Now we've opened up an even bigger can of worms. Are those who comment on websites also part of the media? Is this part of the citizen journalism model? If a blogger can be considered a journo, can a blogger's groupie be considered a journo as well? While this is the biggest sporting story of the year in Australia, it would have been a much bigger story if the courts had have accepted the legal pleas of the media. It would have become impossible to put an injunction on publishing anything in the mainstream media because all a mainstream media journalist would need to do is publish the information under a fake name on some 2-bit blog hosted offshore and then they could splash it all over the papers claiming, but everybody already knows. There's no easy answer for this one. You can't just pretend the internet doesn't exist and it isn't part of media. You can't create a legal situation where injunctions are impossible to enforce. Sometimes they're warranted, such as when children are involved. And you can't create a tier system and declare that some websites are real news sites and some aren't, because where would you draw the line? The mainstream media might just have to accept the fact that it can't have the best of both worlds. If it wants to be considered the real media, then it has to accept the responsibilities of this, not just enjoy the rights.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb.
I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though.
Dr. Ron.
But it shouldn't be this hard.
It shouldn't be this complicated. You should just click on something and get your song.
Graham Callaghan.
Do you routinely take the covers off new devices just to see what's inside them?
Mark Diggins.
It's a bit of a shame it's come to this because you shouldn't have to have identification to make a phone call.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You going
to
read the letter?
I can.
Do you want me to read?
Glad we're all organised.
We did have a production meeting this evening.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back. Yes, it is Safety Awareness Week for young kids online, as the Honourable Senator Helen Coonan has been out there selling her wares about and all that sort of stuff this week too, which is... Well, very interesting, really. Now, did you know, Dr. Ron, that the broadband over power lines debacle is about to ramp up again in this countryside?
I thought this died a natural death. We haven't heard about broadband over power lines for many months.
Fallen off the radar a bit, there hadn't it? Unfortunately, the radar has picked it up again.
Oh.
And Robert Broomhead, we probably have to have a chat to him very shortly to find out what's going on with the Wireless Institute of Australia, because they're very adamant against it. Creates a lot of harmful interference to things like AM radio and FM radio and all sorts of things.
Didn't they do a study that proved that it caused harmful interference?
It is. You're very loud, Graham. Yes.
I'm sorry.
They did. They did. Yes, and yes, you're right. But this week, Australian IT reports that a consortium led by Optus is considering the use of power lines to deliver broadband to homes as it prepares to battle Telstra for the rights to build a high-speed broadband network. Wonder if this is going to be the competition to the fibre to the node. Fibre to the power line. An interesting concept, really, isn't it?
Fibre to the substation.
Yes. Mm. Yes. I wonder if you have a power outage, do you lose your broadband? I guess you do, don't you?
Well, yeah, it would depend.
If you don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if you've got no power, what does it matter anyway, doesn't it?
So your computer's not going to, yes.
You never get a complaint about an outage, would you? Because you can't, yeah, sorry. But a senior Optus executive revealed that the consortium known as the G9 was considering the proposal in its bid to win regulatory concessions from the federal government. Public debate over the new network has been dominated by the proposals that rely on fibre optic cable to boost broadband speeds. There you go. Is it going to come back and haunt us all? It's a scary prospect, really. Would you subscribe to a service, Dr. Ron or Graham, that would provide broadband over a power line of all things?
I wouldn't, no.
Why wouldn't
Why?
You?
Why?
Because it causes harmful interference to radio communications.
But is that the only reason? Would that affect you? How would it affect anyone else? I agree with you. Don't get me wrong. But would this be a protest vote? I think it would be because
it would be a protest vote, yeah, because I'm a radio enthusiast.
But as a general person on the street, would you care? Would you really care that it came over power lines or whether it came over...
That might depend on whether it interferes with the radio station that you're trying to listen to or the television station you're trying to listen to.
Won't affect your podcast, will it? Well, it will, actually, if you don't have an electricity to download it with.
Well, it might affect your walkie-talkies that you use, or it might affect some business radio that you're trying to operate. It could have all sorts of effects.
I listen to AM radio when I wake up in the morning. If it affects that, I would be quite... Stroppy. I'm pretty stroppy in the morning as it is, but
yes,
you see me in the morning. It's if I don't have my AM radio to listen to, I'd be very cranky. If it was wall to wall noise just generated by broadband over power lines.
Yep, and if you could still hear it, but it had some annoying buzz that went right through it, and that would really start to annoy, wouldn't it?
It would affect listening further afield, I would thought. If you're in a marginal area for radio. Yep. Like out in the countryside somewhere. Or even if you're, well, as you said before, Graham, you're a bit of an avid radio enthusiast. I must admit, one of the things I do at night from time to time is have a bit of a spin around the AM dial, like Dr. Ron listens in the morning.
Listen
but
to
at
those
nighttime,
obscure country Queensland stations and things that rock in.
It's bizarre what you can find it really on the AM radio at night. And it'll obliterate all those sort of things. You'll get the gentle hum of a buzz of someone surfing
downloading the latest, I don't know what.
Yeah.
It's not too gentle either, just quietly, that buzz and that noise, because we heard examples of it. When Robert came in,
we should revisit that
back or something. Yeah, it was a horrendous noise.
It was. Mm. We should do a revisit on that. But anyway, thanks to Optus. Yes, it may be worth having a bit of a
back.
Yes.
Thank you.
I wonder if there's going to be laws about that. I wonder if the ACMA would say, no, you can't do that.
I thought it was called the Radio Communications Act, but I could be wrong.
Depends how much money you've got.
Oh, I see.
Yes. How deep are your pockets?
Indeed. All the laws work like that, though.
And throw a bit of a federal election into the mix? It's a very big gross generalisation, Graham, you've just made there. We'll move on, shall we?
Yes. If you have a comment about this, litigation at techtalkradio.com.au. Graham will answer your feedback.
Very good. I've changed screen at the moment. I can't see the emails at the moment. Yes. We spoke, I think, last week or the week before about a Russian MP3 site.
Yes.
Well, anyway.
They got let off in Russian courts.
They did. So if you're looking for MP3 plagiarised music, ripped off, illegally downloadable.
Yep, go to Russia.
Have a bit of a look on allofmp3.com. I tried to go there the other day for curiosity's sake and I couldn't find anything.
It's not a .ru site. They've just decided to add insult to injury and register a .com domain.
Exactly.
Do it on one of them.
Exactly. Mm. So this is quite interesting. Russian music download site, all of mp3.com has said it will resume business soon after a Moscow court ruled in its operation in accordance with Russian law. So they said it was okay. No music is currently on sale, but a statement on the website says business will begin shortly with enhanced payment procedures and a large selection of music. Now, I tried to go there, and I'll try it right now. You can all talk amongst yourselves while I lean over onto the computer.
The Russian currency, is it the ruble?
Used to be the ruble.
They haven't gone euro, have they? I don't think that's politic yet.
No, not just yet.
What, the ruble?
Yeah, isn't that the Russian currency?
If Eugene's listening to us.
I've got a strong suspicion that a fair amount of Russian currency is in US dollars.
Yes, a lot of their currency would be US
greenbacks.
Dollars. Yes. Well, you could potentially pay via credit card or something. We'll have to have a look at the
credit
website.
Credit card companies are very good at converting obscure currencies into your local currency for you.
Mm. Or via PayPal, things like that.
All of those, yeah.
Mm.
Sorry.
Any success, Andrew?
It's waiting for all of mp3.com. Oh, hang on. Hey, it's done a translation to a .ru.
Ah.
But we are very slow in the broadband side of things. Oh, here we go. No, just talk amongst yourselves. There's a live radio. It's exciting, isn't it?
It's a long way to go for the broadband signal. Go all the way from here to Russia.
Yes. Yeah. We've changed URLs about 3 times.
Oh.
I think we've been waiting for CSS of all of 3.ru now.
I'm looking forward to the pop-ups that you're about to get.
No, here we go. We got it. Look, music industry news. This service will be resumed. The service will be resumed in the foreseeable future.
So it's still not yet resumed.
No. We are doing our best at the moment to ensure that our users can use their account, top up balances, and order music. There you go. So, but it sort of, you know, flies in the face of the record companies, really, doesn't it? If one country, one organisation says it's legit, well, then the internet's a global thingy. Has anyone told them that?
Mm.
So...
Yes, I think that's the source of their consternation, but never mind.
Mm. Anyway, so we'll watch this space. But earlier in the month, a court in Moscow ruled that the proprietor, Denis Kvasov, of All of Three's former head, was not guilty of intellectual property theft, according to the Russian laws. Mm. So anyway, there you go. Now, in other Telstra news, Telstra sends 500 jobs offshore. How about this? This is... I know, sign of things are all going to India, I believe. No, actually, Filipino, would you believe?
What type of job?
That's a very good question. Mm. Probably mobile net. They can fly them in nowadays.
Yes.
Telstra is moving as many as 500 sales support jobs to centres in the Philippines just a fortnight after it took our full-page newspaper advertisements boasting about keeping jobs and investment in Australia.
Mm. So for sales support, can we read call centre ringing you up, hassling you type jobs?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Maybe. Who knows? But then again, if you're on the books for Telstra and you're getting spammed by them on the call, that you're a customer of theirs. They can spam you all they like.
I didn't say they couldn't. I'm just asking if that's what it is.
Probably. Unions say that Telstra is replacing its redundant staff with Filipino call centre workers. Now, there was a lot of redundancies recently announced by Telstra.
There were.
Getting rid of call centre operators and things like that, which is probably... not that good when you think about it. Telstra, which is ramping up efforts to cut its costs as part of Sol Trujillo's $11 billion overhaul, because we've got to fund his pay packet somehow.
That's the one.
Is believed to have sent a number of staff to the Philippines in recent weeks to train offshore workers. So there's a bit of speculation there. Did you know that Sol Trujillo is paid 34 times what the Prime Minister's paid?
It's not bad. Not a bad effort.
No. And he beats his benchmarks. So, yeah. Anyway.
I'm sure he works very hard and deserves every cent that he's paid.
For the Australian company that is Telstra, is it going to go like Hutchison's and go offshore? So when you ring up and you'll get an Indian that gadget thing. I mean, the song we play in the opener there, or that bit of audio.
Yes.
Welcome to Telstra. How may I be helping you?
One of the people I rang up during the week to get my direct debits and things changed was 3.
Oh, yes.
Spoke to a very nice lady with
Bangladesh
Indian
or
accent. Yes, she's very
Bangalore
helpful.
Bangalore or wherever they happen to be.
Well, as long as she was very helpful, she then was. There's no problem.
There's just that annoying
Can you
delay.
Tell me the pin on your account, please, before I go any further?
Yes. Just that very annoying delay. It's obviously getting trucked over there on an IP network.
Oh, okay.
It's not quite 100%, but no, she was very helpful.
Have you seen some very... Oh, sorry, I digress, because that's the nature of the show. I went to an ATM machine this morning to withdraw some cash, because it's
Speaking
Monday.
Of Indian call centres, yes.
Yes. Yep. It just popped into my mind. Have you ever... One of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life came up on one of the displays in the Commonwealth Bank's ATM today when I was there. It says, please remember to remove your cash from the dispenser. Like... Hello? How many people would go to a teller machine and walk away and leave 40 bucks or 80 bucks?
Can I answer that question by saying enough that's warranted them to actually write that into the software to remind people to take their cash?
It's the absolute, you know...
It beeps at you till you take your card.
Next thing, they'll be putting instructions on pedestrian traffic lights and telling you how to cross the road.
Please remember when it's a red man not to start crossing.
Sorry, I thought that was very amusing this morning. When I was at my teller machine, I thought, oh, what, you mean people forget to take their cash? You know, winning a lotto as you walk past the teller machine.
There's a teller machine at the supermarket just up the road here that habitually has a Windows blue screen on it.
I've seen that one
prominently,
and that's not the ANZ one, is it?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Is it ANZ? I don't know.
They're blue.
Oh yes, ANZ has a blue logo. Yes, but I always find that quite amusing.
All right. Mm. Speaking of amusing, we digress, and that means we'll run over. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Doctor. I'm the late Graham Callaghan, and I don't mean as in late, but as in late, has joined us in the studio, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
Tech Talk Radio.
Andrew McComb.
I think what people have on their homepage tells you a lot about what a person's like.
Dr. Ron.
In the past, we've talked about ways in which we can...
string them along.
Manage, I think, is the corporate expression, Mark.
Graham Callaghan.
Don't open things that that you're not expecting, even if they do appear to come from somebody you know.
Mark Diggins.
I heard a rumour today.
Ooh, I want to hear this.
I like your rumours.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's $5 a month for 10 megabytes.
Oh, ouch.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Now we can talk about things that aren't on the rundown. Welcome back to everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan in this evening, talking all things technologically. Can I share something with you boys?
Are we going off radar?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Have you been to Google Maps lately?
Yes.
Did you notice anything different about it? Probably not, because you went to .com.au, didn't you?
Potentially. I was trying to think what I was doing, looking up a street, and I was going to the map layout, not the satellite layout. What's changed, though?
If you go to... I should bring it up on the screen here and show you, boys, but the way things are going on the internet this evening, I think we're using BPL to connect. If you go to maps.google.com instead of maps.google.com.au... go and have a look around San Francisco area, where Lyd lives and all those sort of places, and you'll find that a lot of the roads now are actually blue. Little blue tracks, little blue streets. This is the new...
Did someone have a leaky thing of paint on the back of their truck?
I don't know.
Painting the roads blue?
I don't know, I'll show you very shortly. But okay. Go and have a look at, say, something like... come down south, somewhere down near San Jose or something like that. You'll see there's a little new icon on the street, on the map as well, called Street Level, I think it's called.
This is the street level photography stuff.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Now go and have a play with this. This will blow you away. I'm sort of thinking, is nothing sacred? Absolutely nothing sacred. Anyway, I went there and I typed in an address where I knew and I put the little man on the blue street. Guess what? I had a 360 panoramic view, which I could zoom in and zoom out.
It's not bad, is it? I've had a bit of a tinker with it. I haven't had a tinker with it for a while, probably a few months now, but it's not bad.
I had terrific. A look at it a few weeks ago when they were having a bit of a disagreement with some people about some things that had been photographed that might have been inappropriate.
Yeah,
people,
a lot of privacy issues.
Yeah, people coming in and out of places where they might not have wanted to be photographed going in and out of.
Oh, you've got to be unlucky, haven't you? To be sort of, you know, unscrupulously caught in the act or something like that.
Yeah, but you might not want people to see your car parked out the front of an address or you might not want people to see you walking out of a particular premises. Or...
Oh, look, you drive anywhere in any major city these days and everything's videotaped, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, but if you're not doing anything wrong, you've got nothing to hide.
Well, that's what I would have thought all the time. Why? Who's doing things wrong?
No one. This is our point. See, it's all good. I'm just trying to bait Graham, but it's all right.
The real scary part will be when it's real time. Oh, who's that walking out of there?
That will be that's the point. Very scary, yes.
Oh, dear. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in because it was one of those very interesting moments that I had while I was tinkering around on Google the other day.
They need it here. They need the blue lines here.
It'd be very good. Especially, you know, you could be up around Sydney at the moment and go and have a look at APEC.
They'd take the film away from the little photograph vans. The police had stopped them from taking photographs of the wall.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're making people delete the photos out of their camera.
Crikey.
That's Big Brother. Why? What are they afraid of?
They're afraid that you're going to take a photograph of the wall and use it to plan an attack.
Are you kidding, aren't you? Just fly a plane into it. That's what someone did a couple of years back.
Don't say that.
No, I'm seriously, like, no, seriously, guys, if you're going to do something nasty at APEC, a little war like that is not going to, I wouldn't have thought, you know, hopefully they've all got their act together, because it's a fairly big target, really, when you think about it, so I think that's why they're taking their stance on the way it is.
They've got no police horses.
No, they haven't, have they? They've got the flu.
They've all got the flu. Yeah, the Google equine flu.
The Google? Oh, Google equine. Google using the verb there.
Yeah, really. Equine influenza.
Yes, that's the one. If you're overseas and you don't know what we're talking about, we've had our racing industry here is in turmoil at the moment.
We have the Melbourne Cup, the race that stops half the nation.
Well, yeah.
It's coming up, and we're flu-free in Victoria, but apparently
in
New
South
Wales
and Queensland, all the horses are in quarantine.
Yes.
You can't move them around.
So if you're listening to us up in the northern part of the East Coast and you're having trouble with it, our sympathies.
Vista is due for an update in 2008. Service Pack 1, I'm assuming this will be.
Okay.
Microsoft said it planned to release the first major update to its Windows Vista operating system since its inception.
Yeah, there's a beta version of it floating around.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh. Many of Microsoft's large corporate customers wait for the release of the first service pack, a software package of fixes, updates, and improvements before implementing it on the new Windows operating system. I must admit, I do that too. Normally don't roll things out until they sort of get their first service pack out. Now, I must admit, I've used Vista, and I like some of its features, but boy, do I hate some of its stuff. The security issues out of the box, fantastic. But you got to, you know, to try and turn some of these things off, you have to know how to get into, you know, snap-in editors and MSC editors. And then, Graham, have you come across all any of this sort of stuff in your travels?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Is it good, bad, or indifferent? What do you think?
Well, it's tedious to use if you're wanting to do those things. But if you're just day-to-day doing, if you're not installing software all the time like we are, and you're not changing, you know, deep-rooted settings in the system or even not-so-deep-rooted settings in the system. If you're just using it day-to-day to write Word documents and print stuff off and that sort of stuff, you don't get too many of those warnings. But if you are like us and you're always installing software or changing settings, doing all that stuff, mucking around with printers, you are going to get a lot of these little tedious security warnings. It comes up everything you want to do. It wants your permission to say, you know, are you sure you want to do this? This requires administrative permissions.
Even to plug in a Firefox update, a plug-in, you know, like you want to go and get the Flash browser or something for your Firefox.
Yep.
Because
it has to be installed as the administrator, yeah. If it installs for all users.
But even if you do log in as an administrative user, it still says, no, you have to be logged in, run as administrator and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Give me a break.
Yes, because that's what people were doing with Windows XP. They were doing everything with they've got administrator privilege to do non-administrator tasks, so that if you accidentally open a Word document that's got malicious code in that can change settings on your system, then it's already the administrator, so you don't get a warning. Whereas on Vista, in that same situation, if you do something that you're not expecting to need to be in the administrator to do, and it does... You know, it's got something embedded in it that's nasty that tries to install something or whatever. You get a warning on Vista where you didn't used to.
Security and usability is a very delicate balancing act.
It is a delicate balancing act, and Microsoft have always been on the usability side of that.
Mm.
And Vista's their
first time they've slightly the other way.
One of the first times they've gone the other way. Exactly right.
SecPoll. Great thing to type in at the command prompt on Vista and go for a bit of a...
What is it? SecPoll?
Security policy.
SecPoll. Oh, what does that do?
It lets you tweak the security policy. So you can go down there and say, do you really want me to ask every time you elevate the program to all this stuff? It's a good tip if you're using a lot of it. But don't go there if you don't have
to. It's less annoying, but it's less safe as well.
It is. But it is less annoying, actually, because as the IT person in the office, I don't get harassed. Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? Speaking of interesting tricks,
yes.
Once again, off the rundown, a scenario at work this week which had me pulling my hair out, one of the guys in the office runs, on the Vista machine, runs Outlook, the contents, email, client,
email,
and all that sort
calendar,
of stuff.
All that sort of stuff.
He came up to me and said, why can't I get any pictures in my Outlook? You know, in the HTML emails, it's like a graphic or a footer or anything like that.
They're blocked by default, are they?
Yeah, good question. No is the answer to that, because you can right-click on when you get your email come through and say, allow all these things for everybody. Mm-hmm. Allow all the graphics.
Allow images from Dr. Ron or whatever.
Now, if you do that and it says, yes, I'll allow everything, and you still don't get the pictures, where do you go to next? Where do you go and try and work out why on earth you're not getting pictures downloaded in Outlook?
The knowledge base or Google.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I thought too, and I spent some time there trying to find it out.
Did you find the reason?
Yes, I did. I did. Because somebody had gone into Internet Explorer, which was not their preferred browser. They were a Firefox user, so they used Firefox all the time.
Yes.
Firefox would download all the HTML stuff on the internet. But Internet Explorer 7 was checked to work offline.
So it wasn't fetching remote images.
That's right.
Yeah.
In Outlook itself, where the mail client is, you've got the same dialog box, work offline or work online, and it was selected to work online. But I've learned the lesson that Internet Explorer is God. If your settings in Internet Explorer are wrong, regardless of what other Microsoft product you want to use, they don't work.
Yeah,
so there you go. There's a trick to everyone who I lost... I've got a few less follicles now because I'm going, why? And it was very frustrating. But anyway, there you go.
That's a very good tip. But most Microsoft products use Internet Explorer to render HTML. So
exactly right. But if you're using Firefox and you don't use IE, which is what this particular person was doing, and someone had accidentally or deliberately, I don't know how, because you know how things happen on computers, they just happen.
That's right.
Something had checked the work offline box in Internet Explorer, and as a result, no pictures.
There you go.
And of course, Outlook didn't download pictures, and yeah, anyway, very frustrating. But there you go. There's a tip for everybody who headed down that line of things. Oster, public broadcaster. Now, speaking of that, we'll talk about what's coming up next week after this. Pay television group Austar could sell or create a new joint venture for its regional wireless spectrum after an Optus-led consortium recently beat another that included Austar for $958 million in federal government broadband funding. This is tit for tat stuff again. Media understands Austar is talking to several parties, including Optus, about options for the spectrum, which it paid $180 million several years ago. Now, this is Wi-Fi. WiMAX? WiMAX. In the rural areas, and obviously everyone was juggling around doing band swapping and things like that. This is more of the same of this that's sort of creeping out.
I'll give you 10 megahertz here, you give me 15 megahertz there, and we'll do all these dodgy deals.
I find it, you take a step back and you look at what the federal government's policy was with spectrum back then. They auctioned it. They couldn't give a damn about
who got what
or how it was going to be used. All they wanted was the moolah. And they got the moolah, and now we have this issue now where there's no
The spectrum, the people that own the spectrum and the people that need the spectrum are not necessarily the same people.
That's right. So, Austar, good on you guys.
Stick it on eBay.
Now, Pay TV, you had a chat to Matthew Robert. Speaking of eBay.
Yeah.
1995 is when eBay started.
Is that right? 12 years ago.
Yeah. They've come a long way in 12 years, haven't they?
They've done all right.
I just thought I'd throw that in. I heard that on the radio today.
That's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, I must admit I've only been using eBay probably for this millennium. I didn't use it last millennium. Probably because I didn't know how to. Probably because it was new. Probably because I didn't know. Anyway, I thought I'd throw that in.
Do you sell stuff or buy stuff?
Both. Both. I can clean out my garage. Instead of putting it on the hard rubbish on the nature strip, I can flog it on eBay.
And then buying a whole new set of rubbish.
No.
Fill it up again.
I normally inherit it from people, things like that. You were very proud of me the other day when we moved offices. A lot of stuff went in the big wheelie dumpster bin.
It's
that
was good
on the
opportunity,
other side of
the road. Isn't it?
Oh, it's a sensational opportunity. Dr. Ron, we're going to be talking to Matthew Robinson next week.
Yes, next week.
About pay TV in Europe. Do tell. Can you give us a bit of a tease?
Yeah, I can.
Tease me, baby.
I was asking Matthew about what happens over there with electronic program guides, how much are the subscriptions to services like ICE TV that we have here? And he said, subscriptions? What? You're kidding me, aren't you? What, the free EPG services?
He'll never come
have
back to Australia, will he?
No, he's got it pretty good over there.
Now, just to put people in the picture, Matthew is a Melburnian who's moved to Denmark.
He's an expat. He lives in Denmark.
He eloped.
He did elope. Don't mention the war. And he's settled there rather nicely, so he's doing all right for himself over there. He's a bit of a gadget guru, and he likes his toys.
Yep.
And I was asking him about television, and he was telling me about DVB-C, which is the digital cable standard.
Okay.
Because he has...
We don't have that here.
No, we don't. It was very interesting. He has cable running into his tuner card rather than an antenna on the roof.
Okay.
And he's also telling me about the TV...
Well, we have digital cable here.
Yeah, this is...
It's not using the same standard.
No, it's using a different standard. So he was telling me about that. He was also telling me about TV licensing.
Do they have it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they need a license to watch television.
Yes.
They've got TV
detector vans.
They do.
Well, they go around listening for the IF, the intermediate frequency of your TV set. And
they
go,
do.
Oh,
you're
listening too.
But he said that...
is coming from a man who's been pulled over in this state for having a radar detector in his car.
Yeah. That was funny.
That was very funny.
Dear.
What was the terminology that the arresting officer said? He said, you can either give it to me or we'll pull the car apart, but we know you have one.
Yes. We know it's in your car somewhere. He went, you're right.
You're not allowed to have them in this country. Well, in Victoria, I don't know what they're like in other states.
No, not anywhere in this country now.
You're not allowed to have them here anyway. So,
So that's coming up next week. We'll be hearing from Matthew Robinson, our European correspondent.
All right, we'll take a break. Oh, let me speak. I put my tongue back. We'll take a break and we'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Stick with us. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back. Did you know, I bet you did, that the tech teens, you know, the teenagers that are so tech savvy in our lives these days.
The techie teens.
They're the ones. A report on sleeping patterns of over 28,000 children and teenagers has confirmed that younger people are sleeping much less than they used to on school days and are building up a chronic debt that has to be slept off on the weekends because they sit there and...
They sleep at debt.
They do. They do. They just run out of sleep. They just, you know, pass out. But anyway, that's because of their gadgets, you know, their mobile phones. They must be under the covers there at night texting.
You'd be off to sleep for half an hour or so and then your phone would go beep, 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 beep with a text message and you'd be waking up and replying to it.
I haven't got to that stage in my kids' development yet as to they don't have mobile phones. They do sleep.
Not yet.
Yeah, what age do you reckon they'll get them? So... Anyway, sleep researcher Professor Timothy Olds from the School of Health Sciences and University of South Australia compared two surveys of Adelaide children aged between 10 and 13 to analyse sleep changes between 1985 and 2004. And they were the conclusions that he came up with, that technology is robbing our kids of sleep. But I could have told you that when I was a young kid. How many hours of Warcraft did we blow just sitting there playing stupid games?
Lots and lots and lots.
Yes. And to this day, I refuse to even go anywhere near things like
that. Oh, come
like
on.
That.
We'll drag you back into it one day.
Maybe Christmas or something like
that. Yeah.
Now, Graeme, just in the news tonight, you mentioned about something about atoms and silicon things and podcasting and iPods and the one thing. What are they going to do? They're going to put the whole Warner Brothers movie library on an iPod now or something? Or they're looking at the technology to do that? Because
That's right. They haven't built it yet, but there were a group of scientists who had worked out how to manipulate and measure the magnetic field on a single atom. So if you've got instead of having, you know, great chunks of oxide on a tape or on a disc surface, you only need to manipulate the individual atoms, and therefore each atom can be a bit.
And it's amazing. How do you work
all the bits add up to a massive amount of data?
I'm just thinking back to my chemistry days in school. An atom having magnetism, is that right? Because you've got things like, I don't know, iron and ferrous, Fe.
Yeah,
that obviously had polarity, didn't it? And magnetism. But how do other? They must use certain atoms. Must be like cassette tape magnetisms.
Look,
and things like that.
I honestly don't know the details of how.
Oh, Graham, I'm disappointed. You're supposed to research this show. we're having a thermonuclear cap on this evening, and splitting of atoms. Actually, Dr. Ron, you've been down to
work
the.
Work on that for next time.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Ron's been down to the accelerator thingy.
Oh, okay.
They smash atoms in...
What do they call it?
Synchrotron.
That's the thing.
I wonder
if that's where they're researching all this technology. I think that'd be great. Imagine that.
A giant microscope. Yeah.
Imagine having all your DVDs on one iPod. That's very scary when you think about it, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But if you think about it, we're reaching limits. You can't get a laptop drive that's nearly as big as the drives that you expect as standard these days in your normal PC.
Is that physically?
Yeah.
Too big.
Because they can't make the data store and it's, you know, in a small enough format. So this is addressing that problem.
So has Moore's Law finally hit a pivotal technological problem?
Well, yeah, well...
Because he was the man who said that everything would get better and faster exponentially.
I think Moore's Law was talking more about processing power rather than storage. The atom thing was talking about storage. But there was another related story, which was about the logic gates, which would come down to the computing power. So I think that they're working on that side of it as well. And, the logic's getting smaller as well. So, you know, it could all add up. And I suppose... as well as magnetic storage, you're talking about these days people starting to use solid state, like flash memory storage, and that's going to get smaller and more popular as well. You know, the next generation of hard disks aren't going to have hard disks in them; it's going to have flash memory in them.
The only thing that bothers me about storage is the bigger they get, the harder you fall.
Yes.
It'd be like falling off the top of a giant building and going face first into the concrete when you lose a terabyte of data.
That's
and you
right.
Haven't
backed it up. That's really, the problem with having a terabyte array of disks is you've got to have a terabyte of backup medium as well.
You'll have a 320 gigabyte wristwatch and you'll lose it when you go swimming or something.
You'll lose your entire
life's work.
That's right.
Gone.
Well, it's happened before, and it will happen again, and it will happen to you.
Yes.
Make backups.
Just another, because we're waffling tonight. Well, no, we're not waffling. It's educational information. IINet, they're an ISP in this country. They're operating a fairly sizable internet sort of, you can go and get your bandwidth off them.
Yes.
They're also having a, they're thinking kindly of Macintosh users. They now have the first dedicated 24-hour Macintosh support line. I didn't think Macs needed support. I thought they just worked out of the box. But nonetheless.
So if you can't connect your Macintosh to IINet, you've got a special number you
pretty
can
much.
Ring.
I think they're appealing to the Mac users.
And you don't have to wait in the same queue with the and PC users.
Press 1 if you have a Mac. Press 2 for all other users.
Special type of ADSL. I have Apple Talk Digital Subscriber Line.
No.
IINet COO.
Apple Talk over ATM.
That's it. Nice. That's what the world needs.
What's a COO? Anyone know?
A chief operating officer.
I'll buy that. That's good.
All right then.
IINet chief operating officer.
Did you like that one?
Mark White. Yes, it was good. Said that the move was in response to the growing number of IINet customers using Macs. The percentage of IINet customers that use Macs is higher than ever before. They currently represent around 10% of the customer base, and we expect our Mac user numbers to increase even faster than the industry predictions.
Good on you, Mac
there you
users.
Go. There you go. If you're so a Mac
all,
person...
And they're all want... banding together and going onto one ISP.
That's good.
Yes, keeps them contained.
But I think it's...
I'm going to get in trouble over that.
Email Graham now, graham at techtalkradio.com.
It's bad enough I'm about to declare email bankruptcy as it is without you making comments that. Like that on air.
Crikey.
Some of my best friends are Mac users.
They're people too. Yes, leave them alone.
Sorry.
And listen, guys, we are going to get emails about this. Stop it. Stop it.
Stop it at once.
Speaking of Macs, iPhone.
Yes. out of the frying pan. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. The guy who hacked the iPhone in the US got a job. You mentioned this also in the
George
news.
George Holtz, I thought this his name was. Yeah.
Really amazing. He was, 17 years old or something like that, and he managed to... Yeah, here we go. The 17-year-old Holtz said he will be sending 3 of the new iPhones to 3 online collaborators. This is what his prize was for hacking, because... Let me.
Apart from the 3 phones, what?
But he got a car.
The major prize was
come
a
on
new
down.
Car.
You win a car.
Yes,
amazing.
So, G'day, Holtzie, if you're listening, good work. Well done, that man.
I think that was pretty amazing, really, wasn't it?
It was.
It was a good effort by a 17-year-old, because 17-year-olds have got nothing better to do with their time than to get in front of the computer and hack.
Yep.
So there you go.
This guy pulled out a soldering iron and all. He really got into it.
Yeah, no, there was a bit of jiggery pokery to be done, wasn't there?
He probably called it a soldering iron.
They do. Americans say soldering, don't they? It's a strange pronunciation of the word soldering.
Dr. Ron, can you say Australia for us?
Australia.
Sorry, there's been letters about that too.
Australia.
And whilst on the subject of iPhones.
2 syllables. Australia.
You can practice it after the show, right? where was I? You've just thrown me now. iPhones hacked in legal limbo. The hackers have figured out how to unleash Apple's iPhone from AT&T's mobile network, but people hoping to make money from the procedure could face legal problems.
Oh. Yes.
At least one of the companies hoping to make money by unlocking iPhones said it hesitated after calls from lawyers representing the phone company.
Oh, no.
Unlocking the phone for one's own use, for instance, to place calls to a different carrier, appears to be legal. Well, if you buy it, you would think you could do whatever you wanted to do with it.
No, you can't. You
really?
In Australia, you probably couldn't.
No, you'd sign up with all these terms and conditions, and you'd say, no, I'm not going to try and put it on another carrier. I'm not going to open the thing. I'm not going to put in any codes I'm not allowed to and unlock it.
Oh, come on. If you buy something outright, surely you have the right to do that. It's your property then.
No, Andrew. No.
In Australia, if you buy a DVD, you're not allowed to DCSS it and copy it.
That's right.
Pardon me? DCS, come on, you're using acronyms.
You're
now.
Not allowed to
D as in D E.
Remove the.
You're not allowed to remove the copy protection on it, so you can copy it. You're allowed to copy it, but you're not allowed to remove the copy protection in Australia because of the laws.
Really?
That's
so
right.
So what? Someone's going to come around in their little van and do a spot check on your DVD player? I think not.
That someone would be the federal police, but.
Well, I guess potentially if you go to Caribbean markets or something like that, which is a traditional hotspot for that type of activity, they'd probably take an interest in you. But I wouldn't have thought it'd be fairly prolific. I can't tell you any of my friends that
apparently
have been,
they come
had
and
a
knock
visit.
On your door if you upload the latest Simpsons movie.
Yeah, well, we covered that off last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Wasn't I here?
Yeah, I think
you
were.
Oh, yes, I remember now. Yes.
Yeah.
sitting in the
hot
seat.
That's right. He took the... but I'd get distracted over here.
You do.
He took his video camera, his mobile phone
video camera.
Yeah, you goose.
He filmed the film and uploaded it, and next thing you know, he had the feds knocking on the door.
Yeah, catch me if you can.
So they did.
Yes.
All right, now just briefly, Sony have released a new sugar battery because the world
is
being
about this.
The world is being powered by sugar cane. Is this the case, Dr. Ron? Do tell.
Yes, The Age last week announced that Sony has developed an environmentally friendly prototype.
Does it
battery.
Explode like their other batteries do?
No. This is what they're
this
excited about. Yeah,
yes.
That runs on sugars and that can generate enough electricity to power a music player and a pair of speakers. The bio battery's casing is made of a vegetable-based plastic. It measures 3.9 centimetres or 1.5 inches along each edge and works by pouring sugar solution into the unit where enzymes break it down to generate electricity.
Who does? You do or the battery does?
No, the battery does it for you. Test cells had an output of 50 milliwatts. A Sony spokesman said sugar is a naturally occurring energy source produced by plants through photosynthesis.
That's right. That's, yes.
It is therefore regenerative and can be found in most areas of the earth, underlining the potential for sugar-based batteries as an ecologically friendly energy device of the future.
But are they going to take off?
Well,
how many milliamp hours do you get out of a couple of them? Obviously, I know you've just said that they power a speaker and a little thing for a while, but
50 milliwatts.
What's the future of them? Is this promising?
The company said it aims to produce the batteries for commercial use without specifying when. Sony was hit last year by the recall of millions of laptop batteries over fears they could catch fire.
Oh,
one of the
these
one
ones
of the
are
forgotten.
You could go and plant these ones in the garden. You might get a sugarcane tree grow up in the backyard.
Yes, one of the forgotten things in technology over the last several years is we've watched the MP3 players and all that stuff come along. The advances in battery technology over the last 5 or 6 years have been absolutely phenomenal.
Mm. I've even
absolutely
noticed...
Absolutely phenomenal.
Battery life amongst modern laptops is also pretty amazing,
yep,
too.
Yep, that's a big part of it. You get lithium-ion batteries in laptops now instead of, you know, back several generations, they were NiCads that had very short life and they had memory effect and all kinds of problems.
We don't have memory effect anymore,
and
apart from us old folk.
No, we've got the... We've got the these fancy lithium-ion batteries that run forever, and they're small and they're light, and they power your big, bright display on your mobile phone all day. And yeah, it's a forgotten thing that the batteries in these devices have come so far. So it's interesting that we're getting yet another new technology in batteries.
The thing I find frustrating,
I think it'll possibly have potential because there's such a demand for it.
Pardon the pun.
The thing I find incredibly frustrating about batteries is that you never have enough. You always need one. You could have the longest battery life known and you'll still run out of it because I know I do, especially when you go to a presentation on the laptop and you've got the wireless network running, the HSDPA card plugged in there, the screen cranked up full brightness and the music going.
And then your CD-ROM drive spins up to access files and
that's right.
You've got all these mechanical moving parts.
It's one of those rules of technology that we always use them right up to and we push the boundaries of their abilities and batteries is one of those. But
it would be good to see laptop batteries functioning like the way phone, or getting the same life out of a laptop battery as you do have a phone battery now, that would be good.
Well, they're a lot better than they were.
Yeah, they are.
And they're only improving as time goes on.
Yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. It's about that time. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the gadget website and odd spot of the week.
You're listening Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of my own!
Every so often, a gadget comes along that makes you stop and think, yes, I need one of those. This week's...
Every week on Tech Talk Radio, we have a gadget like that.
Oh, yeah, but some not so quite so as other ones. But this one is for you. Now, Dr. Ron, you listen to an MP3 player whilst you're trekking around the suburbs. I know this for a fact.
I listen to a Sony Ericsson Walkman phone.
Have you ever got up and had your little cable wrapped around something and you take your left eardrum out because, you know, oops-a-daisy, you've wrapped it around? Like, I've done that from time to time.
Every morning.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. What would you say if you could get an MP3 player that was exceptionally small, like the iPod Nanos, but yet it actually didn't have cables as such that you could wrap around. It's got a cable, a little cable.
So it was wireless.
No. It's got wires because it's still good quality. Right. This is a new gadget, which I thought was fantastic. It looks like a tie clip.
Oh.
You know, if you've got your suit on and you can plug your little tie, you know, the old tie clips you used to have? Yeah. Completely off. They used to keep you, stop your tie from flapping around in the breeze.
I still wear a tie clip.
Well, they've actually, the clever people have, these inventors at, let me scroll up, have actually managed to put an MP3 player in a tie clip. Oh. Yanko Design. There you go. Visit their site, yankodesign.com. You can find out all about this little tie clip. Now, what happens is you can plug your MP3 songs or into your little tie clip, and there's a little cord that comes from your tie up into your ear. No tripping over of cables anymore. Oh. I think it's absolutely fantastic.
A tie clip MP3 player.
Exactly. About $140. Now,
what's
one
the
of
capacity?
The best... look, it doesn't say on the site.
Oh.
But you'd have to go, I'm sure it'll hold an album or two.
Yeah.
You know, we were just talking about RAM before on the show. There's plenty of it. Lots to go around. One of the other great uses of it is it's got a little scrolling device on the front of it so you can say, hello, my name is Dr. Ron, and you can put that on your tie clip when you go to your conference. I think it's amazing, don't you?
Can you have it display the track name? People could see what track you were listening to.
I reckon you could. That'd be fantastic.
That's
like that.
Good value, isn't it?
Or you could go into, you know, something like a convention and have, you know, politically incorrect things scrolling across on your tie clip. You'd be the centre of attention around the place.
Yes.
You know? or you could display that you're a well-informed person by having it display that you're listening to the Tech Talk Radio podcast.
I like the way you're thinking, Graham. That's fantastic. All right, so there you go. The Tech Talk Radio gadget of the week is the MP3 tie clip, which you can get from Yanko Design for a couple hundred US dollars.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.websitegrader.com. This is a great tool if you're into website development. The website grader asks you to enter a URL or a web address and then enter some keywords that you think describe the website. And off the top of my head, I think you can optionally enter competitors' websites as well into a field. For example, I entered the Tech Talk Radio website address and the keywords technology and podcast. Our website is rated at 73%, according to Website Grader. This means that of the thousands of websites that have previously been submitted, their algorithm has calculated that the Tech Talk Radio website scores higher than 73% of everything else that's been submitted in terms of its marketing effectiveness.
As
a proprietary
good.
Algorithm, it uses meta words and Google ranks and all sorts of things. It gives you a nice HTML report, which also tells you the number of inbound and outbound links, your delicious saved count if you have things linked on the delicious social networking site, Google index pages, all sorts of things. So if you're into website development, have a look at websitegrader.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This is sort of technology related, but it's interesting. It will appeal to the people to whom Tech Talk Radio appeals. Like a scene from the hit film Armageddon, British engineers have joined a competition to try and save the Earth from a catastrophic collision with an asteroid, which could be heading our way.
I saw this on the news the other night.
Did you? I think you pronounce it Apophis. Apophis is a 300-meter-wide asteroid. And is still millions of kilometres away. But in the year 2029, its orbit will take it worryingly close to Earth, closer than many satellites.
Ooh.
When it does, its orbit around the sun will be affected. And just
wonder if it'll clean up a few satellites on the way through.
Maybe. Just a tiny shift of just a few hundred kilometres.
Watch out, International Space Station.
Could mean
oh dear.
That the asteroid returns in 2036 to slam into the Earth, creating unimaginable death and destruction. UK-based space firm EADS Astrium has bid to develop a spacecraft known as Apex, which would reach the asteroid in 2014. Apex will monitor it closely so as to better understand any risk it may pose in the future.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Ron. Thank you, Graham. It's been a pleasure. And we'll do this again next week when we're going to talk to Matthew Robinson from the United Kingdom. No, he's not. Where is he?
He's
Denmark.
From Denmark.
That's
now.
Right. Yes. And he's going to be talking about their pay TV or lack thereof over there in Europe, which is going to be very interesting insight. So... All right, until then, thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. And wherever you're listening to us around Australia, don't forget the podcast. Come and listen to 2 hours of us prattle on, because that's what we do in real life if you're listening to the one-hour version. There's a lot of stuff we have to edit out for legal reasons.
Sorry.
So,
have a look at the forum, have a look at our blogs.
And visit the website, the 73% version. That's not too bad, really, when you think about it. Nice. It's a bit of a labour of love, that
Pretty
one.
Pretty good.
All right, thanks for joining us all, and we'll catch you same time next week. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.